Welcome to Aviation Consumers' continuing podcast series on the world of general aviation products and services. I'm Paul Bertarelli, editor of Aviation Consumer, and this month we're speaking with contributor Rick Durden, who recently test flew the Mustang Citation for a flight report which appears in the May 2000 edition of Aviation Consumer. Thanks for being with us, Rick.
Thank you, Paul. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get into the specifics of the airplane, it's probably worth explaining why Cessna doesn't call the Mustang a VLJ. Why is that?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. It is slightly larger, slightly faster than what is considered to be the VLJ market, which seemed to be 340-knot airplanes. This airplane is just a hair faster and just a little bit bigger. But I think that Cessna, with its tradition of stepping up within its model range, somebody starts out and back in the days of the Cessna 150 and moved up all the way through the 421, they're continuing that approach with the way they're marketing the airplane directly to owner pilots rather than to the charter and the
So they don't really see this as a commercial airplane in the charter for hire sense.
They certainly aren't talking about it. They're looking more at the, and they're talking, frankly, about for the owner pilot, although without looking at the operating cost per hour with the financing, it might very well fit into the air taxi business pretty well.
Speaking of the air taxi business, let's talk a little bit about the cabin size. How does the Mustang compare to something we're all familiar with, say, the cabin class twin like the Cessna 340 or the 414?
It's a little bit bigger than the 340. It's wider. It's more comfortable. It is a closer comparison to the 414. However, the 414 has that what they call the wide oval fuselage. You had more room horizontally than vertically. In this, they've set it up so that there's quite a bit of room for a small aircraft walking down the aisle. They've done the underside of the fuselage a little wider. And not completely round, so that they're able to recess the aisle, giving a little bit more headroom. And then once you're seated, there's a significant amount of room for a club seating cabin. You don't feel that you're jammed in with the other three people. Plus, you've got room on the inboard side of your seat, in the aft seat, for a console with a lot of storage.
Is there a provision for a seventh seat in this?
No, there's not. There is a potty seat that's directly opposite the door, but it is not a seat. There's no seat belt. It doesn't meet any of the crashworthiness standards.
And how about egress for the passengers and crew? Is it easy to get squeezed into the pilot seat from the main cabin?
Very much so. I was amazed how easy it is to get to the pilot seat. In most jets, you've got to be a bit of a gymnast to step over the console and past the seat and around the control column. In this, it was a real piece of cake. The even though it's not a side stick airplane, the control wheel comes out of the panel and isn't in the way, and the console doesn't go so far aft as to cause a problem. In terms of the main cabin door, it's the easiest to operate on a jet I've ever experienced, starting with Learjets and up through the various Citations. It's a one-hander, even for a sophisticated pressurized hull, and they've machined the emergency exit rather than the older style fashion on that you see with other aircraft, where the emergency exit is generally fitted into the fuselage. Here, they've machined it, and so there shouldn't be any problem with getting the emergency exit open if egress becomes a concern.
Yeah, is that an air stair door?
No, it's not. It's horizontally opening, and then there's a two-step folding ladder arrangement that folds out.
So if I'm a well-experienced Cessna 421 pilot stepping up to this thing, what's it going to be like to fly for me? Is it going to be difficult, or will I have an easy transition of it?
In my opinion, you're going to have an easy transition, and one of the first things you're going to discover is that you don't feel macho after you fly it. It's easier to fly than the 421. You don't have nearly as much of a workload with power management. You do have the concerns with high-altitude operations that you have with any airplane, and more so as you're getting up into the high flight levels in the Mustang. Yet a person who's been flying a 421 in the 20s is going to be used to those concerns, so that should not be a major stumbling block.
Of course, you're going to be a lot higher in this. You're going to be in the 30s and 40s.
Well, you'll be in the 30s and 40s. That's true. And you're going to have to learn the physiology involved and the fact that things can go very badly, very fast up there if something does go wrong. And you're going to have to be dealing with quick don masks, which you didn't play with in the 421. But that is that's the sort of learning curve that flight safety and simuflight are used to teaching. There's going to be planning for the different speeds and the descents that you've got to take care of. And the air traffic control environment changes as you get up into those higher altitudes. They expect more professionalism, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a little bit different there. The other difference is you're going to be able to you're going to be much more comfortable on shorter runways in the Mustang than the 421. You'll come down final slower in the Mustang.
Is that right? What approach speeds were you using?
In a 421, I generally used 95 to 100 knots on final. On the Mustang, you're down around 88. Your VREFs are lower.
That's almost like a 210.
Yeah, very much so. And for an accelerate stop distance in a 421, I always figured about 4,000 feet sea level standard day. Accelerate to the appropriate engine out speed and then slam on the binders. In the Mustang, you've got accelerate go or accelerate stop, the balance field of just a hair over 3,000 feet. And it's just, you're going to be much more comfortable on shorter runways. Plus, you've got anti-skid. With the FADEC, you don't have residual thrust. While you don't have the propeller drag that you get with closing the throttles, you don't have much residual thrust in the jet. And once you put it on the ground and pop the boards, you stand on the binders and it stops. I mean, we were stopping within 2,000 feet of the threshold.
And, of course, no thrust reversers.
That's correct. And they're not needed with the FADEC, so that saves weight on the airplane.
And there seems to be plenty of brake energy there.
I felt like I threw out an anchor the first time I stood on the brakes hard. It's with good anti-skid and with the speed brakes, you're putting the weight on the wheels, and the brakes are effective.
Now, all of these VLJs, or light jets, whatever you want to call them, are limited in size. They just don't have that much room for fuel, and the Mustang is really no different. It's really going to have to get to altitude to get any kind of range out of it. You think that's going to be an issue in the operation of the airplane?
That is the quandary, and if I were an owner, I'd figure the Midwest and the Rockies area, I'd probably be just fine. I can get up to altitude because it's not, ATC isn't as crowded. If I were in the California area or east of the Mississippi, I'm curious because you absolutely positively have to get high to get range.
Mm-hmm.
Just one of the problems of a small airframe, you can't carry a lot of gas, and the fuel burn specifics for a jet engine are not as attractive as they are for a piston. So
if your climb gets suppressed to 25,000 feet for some distance, you may have a range problem.
I believe you will, and that I'm going to be curious to see how that works out in service, because the new generation fan jets are much more fuel efficient than the old stuff that was on the Lears, but still you're sucking a lot of gas unless you can get up high.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about performance. What kind of speeds did you see? What did you expect? And how did it behave at the higher altitudes?
Well, performance and handling were handling was very consistent with other Cessnas. The roll rate is not as snappy as a 400 series. It's an airplane that feels like a transport and flies very nicely. It's very responsive. It's just not a airplane you want to toss around. In terms of performance in cruise, I was surprised. The book figures for the airplane at max cruise were 340 knots, true airspeed, and we got 357 at flight level 350. That's 17 knots faster than book.
And you were close to a standard day?
We were 1 degree warmer than 1 degree Celsius warmer than standard,
mm-hmm.
and which should depress performance just ever so slightly. Now, Cessna has a history of being kind of conservative in their book speeds, and I've always figured I'm beating them by a knot or two or three, but I've never seen about a 5% difference. That was pretty surprising.
Other than speed being a little faster than you expected, any other surprises in the airplane?
No. It's just very predictable. It's like folks who have been building jets for a long time have just built another one. Mm-hmm. And there were no surprises. It just it's like watching Joe DiMaggio go back for a routine fly ball.
Mm-hmm.
They built another jet, they certified it on time, and it works well.
And they've got 30 or 40 of them on the wheels there in the Independence factory?
I saw up through serial number 35 on the mm-hmm. assembly line. And now that that took you all the way back to where they're assembling fuselages.
I see.
There's a Garmin G1000 glitch, which was holding delivery of some finished airplanes. I'm assuming that will get worked out pretty soon.
Yeah, in fact, well, we just got a press release from Cessna this week that said that Garmin was working the problem. They expected to solve it in the next few weeks, and have had held up. They've actually delivered one, and it has held up additional deliveries.
And that, you know, that's the sort of thing that you sometimes see with manufacturing, and it wasn't stopping them from taking airplanes down the assembly line.
You've been listening to our continuing podcast series on the latest in aviation products and services with aviation consumer editor Paul Bertarelli. For more information, log on to aviationconsumer.com or subscribe to Aviation Consumer Magazine. For breaking general aviation news, log on to avweb.com. Comments on this audio cast welcome at audionews@avweb.com.